It's time for the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. In an era of chaos, confusion, and craziness, Ference is a voice for common sense. As a financial literacy educator, speaker, and entrepreneur, Ference cuts through the noise to help us understand how current events affect our money, economy, and our freedom. Now, here's Ference Toth.
Welcome to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me. It's yourpersonalbank.com. Do you remember in 2007, we were in a very similar situation economically as we are right now? In fact, at that time, we had a record housing bubble. We had a very large stock market bubble. And we also had record low savings rate. Now, more recently, consumer spending has defied expectations for the last couple of years, largely because of the COVID relief spending, the federal government helicoptering trillions of dollars literally into the economy, but that now has largely been spent. And in fact, if you look back at 2007, for example, the underlying weakness suddenly became apparent as soon as consumer spending started to take a drop. In fact, it dropped like a rock. Now, the economy is, in some ways, is stronger now than it was in 2007, but many of the fundamental indicators regarding asset prices, savings, credit card delinquencies, all those types of things are showing greater weakness than they did even back in 2007. Also, we have a situation where there's less room for the government to come and bail things out if the economy does hit a snag. You see, it's consumer spending that's been keeping the economy afloat over the last couple of years. It's been the lone bright spot in the economy, but it's the consumer spending that's really been the bright spot. And the problem we have now is the savings rates are now at 2.9%. which is one of the lowest points we have seen ever. With this extraordinarily low savings rate, this means that consumers are on fumes. The average consumer is not going to be able to continue to spend like they have for the last two or three years. The COVID relief money is largely gone. Inflation has been taking its toll. It's the cumulative effect, of course, not so much the annual increases, but if you add increases over multiple years, grocery store prices, for example, are about 25% higher than they were 4 years ago. That has a cumulative effect because most people buy groceries on a weekly basis, and that adds up over time, and that eats into savings. So again, the consumer is on fumes. As soon as the consumer starts spending less, which is happening, we will start to see real weakness in the economy. It's been buoyed partially by debt. Credit card debt is at all-time highs, over $1.1 trillion. But using debt to continue to pay for things only lasts for a certain amount of time. Eventually, that bubble will burst. Credit card defaults are starting to increase. Once people either are unable to make the payment or they hit their credit card limit, using debt to purchase items will stop. It's unsustainable. Two possible scenarios that could prevent this from occurring. Actually, there's three. One is a recession, which will cause a reduction of prices. It's a reduction of economic activity. So there'll be some pullbacks on some prices, which would be a relief for most Americans. Incomes have to increase. But the additional problem we have there is recently the U.S. Labor Department announced that this past year they over-reported jobs by 818,000. Many of the headlines stated, well, the U.S. lost 818,000 more jobs than what was reported. That is totally incorrect. The fact of the matter is the U.S. Labor Department over-reported 818,000 jobs is what they are admitting to, which means they lied. Those jobs never existed. The economy is weaker than what many are reporting over the last couple of years. Also, wage growth is not growing. It's actually coming down. We had a spike through the pandemic because a lot of people were unwilling to work. So labor had more bargaining power to increase wages, but that since that point, it has done nothing but go down. Wage growth is dropping at a pace we haven't seen, well, since the mid-1980s. So when you look at all of this, it's really difficult to see where there's some good news, where there'll be a knight in shining armor to come to the rescue. Because the federal government themselves, their debt situation is far worse than it was in 2007. So they have far less ability to come to the rescue and bail things out. So if we do start to see a downturn, which I firmly believe is going to happen, nearly every economic indicator is pointing to that, and now the consumer is running on fumes, jobs numbers are nowhere near as strong as the Labor Department was reporting. They're actually admitting that now. It's hard to see any positive news in terms of the economy going forward, and I believe it's on fumes. I shared this a couple of weeks ago on the show. A recession isn't necessarily something to be afraid of. It's something to be aware of. Many people don't like it. They think it's painful. Well, if you don't pay attention, that's true, but you have to adjust accordingly. Assets that thrived in a low interest rate environment in a boom economy like stocks, real estate, in a higher interest rate environment, slower economy, recession, things like that, will tend to struggle. You just have to adjust, folks. As I stated a couple of weeks ago, economic cycles are just like seasons of the year. We all know there's four seasons in most parts of the country. And when it gets colder, let's say recession is winter, first of all, you have to have a winter before you have spring. You can't have spring without winter, a rebirth. And spring will come, but you got to go through the winter first. But the other thing I think you need to understand is when winter is coming, you got to pull out the winter clothes. If you go outside and it's 30 degrees and you're not wearing a coat, you're probably going to suffer. Well, you could say the same thing about your assets, about your investment portfolio. Things that thrived in the summer, spring and summer, when things were growing and blooming and blossoming, are not going to tend to do so well in the fall and winter where it is colder and there's cold nights and in freezing temperatures. It's not bad. It's just different. Being aware of that and knowing where to allocate your money is the key to thriving and the key to success. And one of the things that I share all the time is, again, in a higher interest rate environment, assets that are interest rate sensitive, assets with guarantees, are going to tend to thrive in that type of environment. And those are like things like CDs, bank money, some bonds, annuities, best time in 40 years. 42 years to do an annuity, by the way. The highest rates we've seen in 42 years. Your personal bank, dividends are increasing. Best time again in 42 years because of the higher interest rate environment. Now, let's discuss that a minute. The Federal Reserve is now likely to start to lower interest rates at least somewhat this year. I have stated for a while that I did not believe that the Federal Reserve would lower interest rates before the end of 2024, primarily because of what they were saying, and then secondly, because their mandate on inflation is about 2%, and we're still about 3%, so 50% higher than their target rates. But they also have a dual mandate, and that other one is to maintain employment. I believe this revision downward of jobs numbers by nearly a million over the past year pretty much forces the Federal Reserve's hand in terms of at least one rate cut, if not more. If I was to be a betting man now, I would guess we would probably see a couple of rate cuts before the end of this year, about a quarter of a point each. I do not believe they're going to do anything dramatic. Certainly we'll see. But I doubt they will, because if you look back in history, every time that the Federal Reserve has moved interest rates by half a point or more at any given point, it's been a crisis situation. And if the Federal Reserve was to, say, lower rates by half a point, well, they would be admitting to a crisis. And a lot of people say, what's going on? They would freak out. And I think we would see a much stronger reaction than, say, a couple of quarter point movements. Even though I do believe now, because of the revised job numbers being so significant, that the Federal Reserve, it's forcing their hand to do some adjustment of the interest rates downward. I do not think it's going to be significant. There's nothing in our economy that makes me believe that we're going to go back to the low interest rate environment we saw the past decade. I don't believe we're going to see 30-year fixed mortgages at around 3% anytime in the near future. It's highly unlikely we'll see it in our lifetimes. That was really a once-in-a-lifetime experience. In fact, statistically, it was the lowest interest rate environment for the longest period of time in the history of our country, since 1787. So the likelihood of that repeating itself is extraordinarily low. Again, do I believe we're going to see some easing on interest rates? Yes, but I think it's going to be minimal. So therefore, interest rate sensitive assets, although maybe won't, like CDs, won't pay the higher rates that they were paying, say, the last few months or last year, they'll still pay much stronger than they were the previous decade. For example, CDs move quickly because bank rates change monthly along with the Federal Reserve. And a great example is, we all know, a couple of years ago, you couldn't get 1% at a bank, even on a long-term CD. And now you can see, you know, 4% range is quite common. I mean, that's a quadrupling of returns in just a couple of years. Increase, that is, of returns just on CDs, for example. The other part of it is your personal bank dividends, they're based on much longer time frames. These companies buy bonds. Bonds are interest rate sensitive. And the bonds that they're purchasing today, and over the last couple of years, in fact, far more profitable than the bonds they were buying the previous decade. And that's why the predictions are dividends will be increasing for at least the next 3 to 5 years, if not longer, because the bonds that these companies are buying are more profitable, say, over the next decade than the ones they bought over the past decade. You average that out, long-term bonds where they're buying 10, 20, 30-year timeframes, you can see where the average return is going to gradually increase. The historical average is around 7%. We're in the 6% range currently, and I believe in the next, say, 2-3 years, we'll be getting into that back into that 7% range. That's what's expected, the experts expect, and that's the historical average. So if you want to get 6% insured, guaranteed, tax-free now, and likely be moving towards 7% in the next few years, insured, guaranteed, tax-free, highly liquid, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com for more information. I have some more jobs information that I think you're going to find very valuable, because we're going to dive into it further to better understand what's really going on. Are you prepared if we fail to avoid a recession? I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. Most of the leading economic indicators show we are headed for recession. Your personal bank earns dividends with guarantees, tax-free, and highly liquid. This protects you from the downside risk and allows you to take advantage of opportunities in a changing economy. For more info, contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. So if you dive into these jobs numbers even further, not only did the U.S. Labor Department revise the jobs numbers by nearly a million over the last year, 818,000, for example, but many of those jobs happen to be government jobs. Private sector jobs have been on a downward trajectory for the past 3 years, consistently. In fact, we're getting down to pre-pandemic levels, even though we have a larger population. So that's really bad. When you have jobs numbers actually going down on an increasing population, that is a bad, bad sign. At the same time, over the last couple of years, government jobs have been on an increase. So there's this widening gap happening between private sector jobs and government jobs. Now, with the government running all-time record deficits, in fact, the government debt is now increasing by about $1 trillion every 90 days. spending more is only going to exacerbate the problem. One of the ways to spend more is hire more government employees. And over the last couple of years, the federal government has been on a tear in terms of hiring federal employees. The financial, political, and social consequences of a government expanding at this record rate while the private sector is retracting offers a really grim outlook for the future. And sadly, oftentimes, many of this involves additional regulations, tax enforcement. In other words, less money in the citizens' or the individuals' hands and more in the hands of the government, of which much of that are wasteful about, we'll discuss further in the future and shortly. But it also influences elections. It can be used to buy votes even or influence votes. It all comes with a price. An overly zealous, overbearing, overlarge government leads to future inflation, folks, because they're spending too much money, as we discuss this all the time. But before I go on with the government, I got one other point here, I believe, that because that was the jobs issues. There's plenty of issues with the jobs numbers. It's not pretty. Again, the U.S. Labor Department reduced the number of jobs it reported over the past year by about 30%. That's a huge number, 818,000 revision down. These are jobs that never existed. They overrepresented. They overreported. They lied. You don't have consistent. In fact, the last 2 years, the Labor Department has overreported jobs nearly every single month, then later revised their numbers down. There's not one single upward revision. Look, if you were statistically off, you would have some upward revisions along with downward revisions. It would statistically sort of average itself out. No, when every single revision is to the downside, and some of these are significant, by 30%, folks, this is a pattern. And frankly, sadly, it's political. It's trying to help the current administration look better because the Biden administration was famous for pointing to the strong jobs numbers. And it turns out much of it was fake. But before I go on about some other things about the government, I need to get back to housing. We are actually in the largest housing bubble of all time. If you take inflation-adjusting home prices, they are now about 100% higher or double the average price, the average over the last 100 years. And by the way, there's only two times in history where we've had the average home price being about double of the overall 100-year average. The last time was 2006. We all know what happened after that, the Great Recession. Right now, overall housing prices are quite a bit more higher than they were even in 2006. This does not bode well for future housing prices. And let me give you an example. There's a house in Dallas. The value is down, in fact, 25% from 2021 pricing. Now, the Dallas and Florida markets right now, the aggregate stats are showing about a 3 to 5% reduction. But as you see more and more of these homes popping up, it gives you the idea of the future direction of where things are headed. My wife has been showing, she likes to keep track of the housing market, and she's been showing me prices of homes that were 500,000 are now 400,000 listing in the last, just the last few months. I mean, that's a 20% reduction, folks. And she's finding these more and more. Now, would I go out there, run and jump and buy those right now? Probably not, because some other things here is pending home sales is at right now an all-time low. So this is the lowest period of time that people have been purchasing homes. Plus, the other factor you have is a lot of people are waiting to see if the Federal Reserve does indeed start to reduce some interest rates. If they do, mortgage rates will come down some. So it's a big wait and see game right now. So inventory is piling up, prices are sliding, and interest rates might be going down a little bit in the fairly near future. All these things bode negative towards the prices of homes. In other words, you can probably find a pretty decent deal now, but likely you're going to find a better deal in the fairly near future. And other thing about real estate, unlike the stock market, which tends to move very quickly. Real estate takes longer. Real estate is made up of millions and millions of people, both buyers and sellers, who have various degrees of perception, knowledge, paid attention. In other words, there's still a lot of folks out there today who maybe they decide to sell their house and they might list it, let's say, for $600,000 to use a number. And because their friend down the street last year sold it for that. So they're thinking they can do so now. And what they don't realize is the market has passed them. It's not, well, it won't sell for that amount today. But it takes some time for those people to become aware of the fact. Why? Because they're not real estate market experts. They're not paying that close attention. They're living their lives, raising their families, you know, building their businesses, their careers, whatever. And so it takes some time. So it's a delayed response. Think of it as a big oil tanker ship that's trying to turn in the ocean. It will turn, but it takes time. I want to change gears here for a minute, and I want to discuss some things about taxes. So we've been hearing a lot about, from both political campaigns, about no tax on tips. Now, I find it quite interesting. I believe it was roughly back in June that Trump brought that out as part of his campaign, and more recently, Kamala Harris has added it to her campaign. Regardless of who came up with the idea first, I mean, you know, you got the copycats, you know, obviously. If you're concerned about tax on tips, you're a service worker, who's the more likely candidate to actually implement? Remember, these are all campaign promises. Are they going to follow through? If this is a valuable consideration for you, you've got to realize one thing. It turns out that Kamala Harris was the tie-breaking vote in the Senate for the IRS to invest more time, money, and energy in going after service workers for tips. So one of the things I state all the time, especially when it comes to politicians, what you do speaks so loudly that what you say, I cannot hear. So although both campaigns are promising no tax on tips, Kamala's history is that she voted the opposite way a couple of years ago to empower the IRS to go after service workers for tips. The one thing I like about this is no tax on tips was not even really on anybody's radar a few months ago. Now both campaigns are talking about it. One thing in particular is that it increases the likelihood that this will actually happen. And this is an important lesson. This gives you an idea of how an idea can quickly take hold and can rapidly become a movement. And I really do genuinely hope that the government imposes no tax on tips. There's a number of reasons behind it. I'm generally in favor of less taxes anyway. Lower taxes, smaller government, more freedoms. But I believe that a tip is a gift between a patron and the provider. So let's use a restaurant as the most common example. You have a waiter, waitress who does a good job, serves your food, makes your dinner a pleasant experience, and they do a good job. They should be rewarded for that. And if they do a great job, they should be also rewarded greatly by the patron. It's a gift between the patron and the waiter. And I believe the government has no business getting involved between those two people. If I want to give more, I have every right to do so. If I want to give less for poor service, I have the same right. Government should have no involvement in that. And that's my libertarian constitutionalist leaning thing. Plus, many of these people that work for tips work hard, not typically the highest income earners in society. And I believe they deserve the fruits of their labor. They should get to keep those. Less for the government means less wastefulness, less spending, and less inflation, ultimately. Here's a thought I want to leave you on before we go into the next segment. Most people receive income from their employer, and the employer pays payroll tax on that money just to pay the employee. The employee also gets to pay employment taxes on the money that's already been taxed. And then next, most people use your taxed cash to buy things which are also have a sales tax. And then Each year, you get to pay the government more money via income tax. And that's on top of paying taxes just to live in your home, property taxes, that you paid for. And all of this is in addition to inflation, which is technically a hidden tax. Now, I'm really grateful that I'm seeing more people start to pay attention to this. And this is key. In other words, one of the key focuses of your personal bank is to reduce taxes. You really should take advantage of reducing taxes whenever possible, whenever legitimate or legally available. And your personal bank is one of the best ways to accomplish not only reducing your income taxes, but also reducing taxes and passing them on to the next generation. Your personal bank is one of the number one tools used by wealthy families to pass wealth from one generation to the next. Encourage you to stay tuned. Next segment, I'm going to discuss this further. This is Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. My show focuses on creating tax-free buckets of money, insured, guaranteed, highly liquid, and the ability to create positive arbitrage. Did you know this is the best time in over 40 years to invest in index annuities? An index annuity allows you to, one, grow your money safely without market risk. Once gains are locked in, they're guaranteed against future market loss. Two, double-digit potential upside on good market years with no losses in bad years. Principal is guaranteed. Three, a 7-8% fixed interest option is available in the first year. If you're interested in growing your money with potential index-related gains without downside market risk, this is the best time in over 40 years to consider an annuity. If your annuity is over 2 years old, the newer products likely have far superior potential returns. Please contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422 for more info. That's yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. I've been discussing a lot here about all the different taxes that we face as a society. It reminds me of one of the early foundational ideas of our country, and that was no taxation without representation. I'm going to explore this thought a little further. The Harris campaign has proposed a 25% tax on unrealized capital gains for those that are very wealthy. Now, first of all, we need to understand what a tax on an unrealized capital gain is. I don't think most people realize the devastating impact this would have. You see, capital gains taxes are typically are taxed on assets that are not income, but are assets that gain in value. Stocks and real estate are two of the most common examples that we often see, but there are many others. Let me use an example with stocks. Let's say you have $100,000 in stocks. And I please understand, add a zero, take away a zero. The principle is the same. And let's assume that those stocks increase in value 10% to keep things simple. So you had $100,000, and then a year later, you have $110,000 of stock. Now, in normal scenarios, if you don't sell it, you don't pay any tax because, yes, you've had a gain on paper, but you haven't realized that gain. In other words, you haven't sold that stock. So therefore, future values could go up. They could go down. You don't know. But it's a paper gain only. It's not been realized. That's the term that's used. An unrealized capital gain would require you to pay 25% tax on that gain. If you gain $10,000, you would owe $2,500 in taxes. Now, you'd have two choices. One, if you had an extra $2,500 because you did not want to sell that stock, you believed it was going to go up further, you could take it out of pocket or other sources and pay the tax and allow it to continue. But what if you didn't have that extra money available? Well, you would have to sell $2,500 of that stock to pay the tax. Let's use an example with real estate. Let's assume that you have a house worth $500,000. Now, let's assume it went up in value 8% in a year, for example, to $540,000. The gain would be $40,000. You would owe 25% of the gain as unrealized capital gain, which would be $10,000. You would have to pay $10,000 in taxes because your house went up in value. Even though you didn't sell it, you could still be living in it, but it went up in value. It's an unrealized capital gain, and the government would want their tax. You would have to pay them $10,000 to keep your house. What if you didn't have the $10,000? You would be forced to sell. That is the insidious nature of unrealized capital gains. Also, using these examples of stocks or real estate doesn't matter. What if then the future value went back to $500,000? In other words, it went back down. Remember, when the house went from $500,000 to $540,000. We had an 8% gain. We paid $10,000 in taxes, 25% of $40,000. Now it went back to the same level it was before. It's back to $500,000. In other words, you lost $40,000 in value. Is the government going to give you the $10,000 back? I don't think so. So if it goes up in value, the government makes money, whether you sell it or not. If it goes back, it goes down in value, well, sucks to be you. You see the problem here? If this type of thing is implemented, this will have devastating impacts on the economy. Now, they get by with it because they initially say, we're only going to apply this to the ultra wealthy. The problem with that is the government has a horrendous track record. The income tax originally was promised to only be on the top 1% of income earners. Well, of course, that changed almost immediately. The reason is you can tax the ultra wealthy, but the problem is there's just not that many of them. And when you discuss the levels of government spending, it's literally a drop in the bucket. If you tax the billionaires in this country at 100%, you took all their assets, it would be literally a drop in the bucket. It would pay for our government. I've seen some statistics on this. I don't think more than a few days, maybe a week or two. The big slice of the pie is the middle class. So they start with the ultra wealthy. They play these class warfare games, get people jealous to start, hey, let's tax the rich. And that's how they get their nose in the tent. It's a slippery slope. It's like getting camel's nose in the tent. And then once it's in, it's hard to get it out because it takes over. Also, how is the government going to really value an unrealized capital gain? You see, the price of an asset, frankly, is unknowable until you actually sell it. The reality is the value of an asset, any asset, is what someone else is willing to pay for it. Until you actually sell, there's no concrete price. There's estimates. Like you take real estate, you can look at Zillow and things like that. The stock market prices change. They vary. But you can offer a stock at a certain price, and it may not necessarily sell at that price because the price moved away from you. Traders understand this all the time. I discussed the liquidity issues. What if you had a gain in an asset? You didn't necessarily want to sell it because you thought it was going to go up further, but you have these taxes owed on it, which means you'd have to sell part of it to pay the tax. Well, a stock, that may not be as big of an issue, but what about things that are not typically that liquid, like real estate? There's fees involved, takes time, and that could lead to the government confiscating the property of private citizens. Also, when you start taxing the ultra-wealthy on things like unrealized capital gains, they have the ability to move to other countries far more than most people. They're just going to leave. So the amount of money that's actually collected by the government when they impose these onerous taxes ends up being quite minimal, because the people that would be subject to it either find loopholes that are invariably in the tax code, or they just leave so they're not subject to those tax. Elon Musk is a great example of moving from California to Texas because of regulations and taxes. And then there is a saying that governments should tax what they want to see less of. So if the federal government starts taxing unrealized capital gains, you will see a dramatic, and I mean a dramatic, reduction of research and development, innovation. I mean, one of the benefits, this amazing country we live in and the society that we've had in the last certainly last several decades, is the amazing technological advances that we have seen, because people are willing to take a risk on new ideas, inventions, things like that. Much of that will disappear because the risks are too great. If they succeed, they're going to have a horrendous tax, whether they sell it or not. And then if it does lose value, which stuff does, and you don't recoup that at all because the government already taxed you. It's a bad idea on every level. And I've got a quote here for you I'm going to share. And then I bet most of you will not be able to recognize the author of this quote, which I will share in a minute. I think many of you will be surprised. But this is the quote. A tax cut means higher family income and higher business profits and a balanced federal budget. As the national income grows, the federal government will ultimately end up with more revenues. Prosperity is the real way to balance our budget. By lowering tax rates, by increasing jobs and income, we can expand tax revenues and finally bring our budget into balance. Now, who do you think said that? John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy, if president today, would be a fiscal conservative. This gives you an idea of how far away we've moved away from fiscal responsibility. And that's what needs to come back with our elected and non-elected officials. We need to, as the people, hold them accountable. And if they continue to recklessly spend, they need to be replaced. And here's some examples of some of that reckless spending. Do you know in the last 4 years, our federal government has sent almost $300 million to Mexico, $324 million to the Czech Republic, the same to Estonia, Lithuania, Poland. Romania has received almost $400 million. Bulgaria, Tanzania has received almost $500 million over the last 4 years. Please help me understand the national security or interest of the United States. Tanzania, Pakistan, over $500 million. Colombia, over $700 million. Philippines, $800 million. Somalia, almost $1 billion. Lebanon, $1 billion. Iraq, $2.2 billion. Jordan, $2.3 billion. Afghanistan, $6.1 billion. Egypt, $6.3 billion. Israel, $8.5 billion. And of course, Ukraine, over $200 billion. We have record debt, historic inflation, declining job growth, yet we're sending billions and billions of dollars to countries that either have little or no economic benefit or national security interests. Some of these may certainly do, but many do not. I don't know about you, but I'm really getting tired of that. And then let's talk about waste and fraud. The White House is unable to track $6.2 billion sent to Ukraine. California is unable to track $24 billion spent to combat homelessness. The Pentagon's unable to track $2.3 trillion of military spending over the last several years. The U.S. Treasury is unable to track $5 trillion of pandemic spending. $5 trillion, folks. That is 1/7 of our total deficit as we speak. These are astronomical numbers. We need, again, as American people, to hold these people accountable. And if they're going to be continue to be wasteful, fraudulent, and irresponsible fiscal stewards, we need to replace them.
Are you concerned about the direction our country is headed and how it may affect your money? I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank show. Your Personal Bank provides a place to grow your money safely with guarantees, tax-free, and highly liquid. This keeps your money safe, and you can take advantage of opportunities regardless of the economic situation. For more information, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422. That's yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. Now, Robert Reich put out a post here, and it is grossly dishonest and deceitful. And I find this extremely frustrating because he's taking advantage of most people's lack of financial literacy and economic literacy. And here's what he stated. He's attacking Kroger for having gross profit margins above 20% over the past 5 years, and he calls this corporate greed as its absolute worst. Well, here's the part that he puts in this post that is incredibly deceitful and grossly unfair. He states gross profit margins were over 20%. That sounds kind of high. Turns out net profit for Kroger last quarter was 1.43%, and the industry average is 1.6%. What does that mean? It means for every $100 that Kroger earns, you give them to buy groceries, their gross profit is 20%. So they keep $20. If you give them $100, they're keeping $20, which is their gross profit, which means 80% is going to purchasing the products, the food stuff that you're buying. The other 20% is going to cover their expenses like their employees, buildings, utilities, advertising, everything else. Net profit is actually the profit of a company. That's what they get to keep after all expenses. Again, Kroger's profit margin last quarter was 1.4%. This is public record. It's not hard to find. So in other words, for every $100 a customer gives to Kroger, they're keeping $1.43 of profit, which is actually below the industry average of 1.6 or $1.60 for every $100. How would you like to run a business where every customer that gave you $100, you kept $1.60 or $1.43? That is a very, very slim margin. Food industry is hyper competitive, is very streamlined, and is very efficient. You have people making attacks on these companies for political reasons, and it's extraordinarily frustrating. In fact, if you wanted to attack companies for price gouging, for having the highest profit margins, it turns out that the top 10 companies in the United States with the highest profit margins, again, public record, happen to be Visa, MasterCard, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, Google, Pfizer, Adobe, Intuitive Surgical, and T-Mobile. Those are the top 10. And Visa and MasterCard, their net profit is approximately 50%. In other words, for every $100 customers spend on Visa or MasterCard, 50 of those dollars are kept by those companies as profit. If you want to attack anyone for price gouging, maybe you should start with Visa and MasterCard, the top two, and Microsoft and Apple are right behind them. My point is simple. The key we need to understand is we need to stop asking how much rich people should be taxed. And what the question we should be asking is, why are people in Congress wasting, and government in general, wasting so much of our money? That's the question that should really be asked. Why would you attack a company like Kroger that's running on a 1.4% profit margin instead of attacking a Visa or MasterCard, which is running on a 50% net profit margin? Well, it's quite simple. If you control the food, you control the people. Also, if you control energy, you control the people. Control healthcare, if you control information, you control the people. And if you control guns, you control the people. This is the why behind it. And that's why I get so frustrated when people attack food companies or energy, healthcare, censorship, guns. The motivation behind the politics, the government, is not what they're saying up front. It's not what they're telling us. It's they want more control. If more people educate themselves and understand the why behind, why is the government attacking farmers? Why is the government attacking oil producers, healthcare? Why are they censoring? Why are they always attacking the Second Amendment? It's because they want more control of the people. If you understand that, you will go a long way to understand what's going on, the real reason, the rest of the story, which is what Paul Harvey used to always say. There's a new term that's really coming out as far as government, and the term is anarcho-tyranny, where the state is more interested in controlling citizens so they don't oppose the people in charge, which is tyranny, rather than controlling real criminals, which are causing anarchy. Laws are only enforced selectively, depending on what benefits the ruling elite. That's the definition of anarcho-tyranny. And that is exactly what we're seeing. Now, I love this. You listen to the show, you know I'm constitutionalist. And I love this statement here. If we stuck to the Constitution as written, we would have no federal meddling in our schools, no Federal Reserve, no U.S. membership in the U.N., no gun control, and no foreign aid. Well, we'd have no welfare for big corporations, no American troops in 100 foreign countries, no arrogant federal judges usurping states' rights, no attacks on private property, no income tax. We could get rid of most of the agencies and most of the budget. The government would be small, frugal, and limited. That should be the ultimate goal. That is following the Constitution. Since we've been discussing following the Constitution and taxes and all that, let me give you one more. Because again, the ideas can germinate and grow quickly, like no tax on tips. Trump has also shared no tax on Social Security. That's another one that I believe should be passed. Because when Social Security was first proposed by the Roosevelt administration, it was promised that it would never be taxed. Of course, that changed in the 1980s under the Clinton administration. So therefore, it was not taxed for decades. Yet, our government changed that. It should be changed back. Social Security is money that's been taxed through employment taxes by the employee that contributed part of their wages to the system. Now that they receive those funds, there's no reason it should be taxed again. But here's another one that's an idea that I would like to see. I'm starting to see traction on it, and I'm encouraged by this. Americans should be allowed to fully own their own property. Once paid off, it cannot be taken from you. It should be yours fully, and no longer should you owe or have to pay property taxes. We're already taxed on many other things, and the reality is they just print more anyway when they want to spend more, which needs to stop. And some people say, well, if we cut the property tax, how in the world would we pay for schools and roads? Well, guess what, folks? There's over 23 countries in the world where there is no property tax. I've mentioned this on this show a few times. I'm half Hungarian. I inherited some property from my grandparents 40 years ago plus. We still own that land. Why? Because there's no property tax. Never paid a dime to Hungary for this land. There is no property tax. By the way, there are several, many other countries that might surprise you that have no property tax. Countries like Israel, Thailand, Croatia, Liechtenstein. There's another European, small European country, Monaco. No property taxes. Cook Islands, Turks, Caicos Islands, there's some of those. Cayman Islands, there's some nice places. These countries have figured it out. So could we. We're smart. We could apply. Especially somebody who's retired, they buy, and if they're on fixed income, things like that, and they buy their forever home or whatnot, they should be allowed to live in their home property tax free, regardless of what happens in the future. And again, as I stated this in the earlier segments of this show, reducing your tax liability is key, and I believe is going to become a bigger and bigger issue as we move forward, because our government continues to spend more money than it receives. There's many proposals on the table to increase taxes. Taxes will increase based on the current tax law that we stand. If Congress does nothing, folks, taxes will increase. Tax rates will revert back to 2016 levels, which means the brackets will increase on nearly everyone. Also, capital gains will increase. The long-term capital gains rate is 15%. If your income is below roughly $120,000, a couple filing joint married, you could potentially sell a portion of your capital gains with zero capital gains taxes. If you want more information on this, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. Again, this tax law is only in place for 2024 and 2025. If you have some assets with capital gains, typically that's going to be stock market type of assets, real estate, etc., you may want to seriously consider selling some or a good portion of those assets while you have either no or low capital gains tax rates. Again, if Congress does nothing, the current tax laws and rates will expire. Long-term capital gains rates will go up to 20%. Do you want to pay 20% capital gain or 15% capital gain? As I stated to one person who had a significant capital gain on an asset he had bought some years ago, and he's been hesitant to sell. He wants to sell. He's concerned about the risk, the market risk going forward. He really does want to sell. He's really concerned, but he's hesitant about the taxes. And as I shared this, the current tax rates in his case would be long-term capital gains of 15%. You're going to get hit with taxes selling this asset. But do you want to get hit with a wiffle ball bat or later with a baseball bat? Because it's going to be harder if the current tax laws are allowed to expire, which again is the law on the books as we speak and the most likely scenario. The only way that current tax rates are going to continue is if Trump wins the White House and the Republicans win the House and the Senate and the Republicans get it together to vote to extend the current tax rates. There's no guarantee of any of those or all of those things happening. And even if they did, this was the point I made to this client, even if all of those things happened and the current tax rates did get extended, they're not going down. They're going to be at the same level they are now. So if you sold now versus a couple of years from now, it's not like you're going to save money on capital gains taxes or income tax for that matter. It just means it's not going to go back up. So if you have capital gains assets, now is the time to sell. You want to take advantage of the zero capital gain or the 15%, depending on your situation, some this year, some next year. Contact me at yourpersonalbank.com for more information on that. Because again, it depends on the person. We in the United States are the world's last and best hope. No one's coming to save us. And it's time to get up and become our own heroes. As always, I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned to next week's Your Personal Bank show. And as long as it's on our money, in God we trust. When people contact me, they often ask, what exactly do you do? And yes, if you contact me, I, Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank show, will respond, not an assistant. I help people increase their returns, reduce taxes, increase positive cash flow, and reduce market risk. I accomplish your goals using various financial tools, including your personal bank. If you have questions or would like to discuss your situation, contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. This show is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information. The presenter and guests of this program do not engage in legal, accounting, or tax advice. Professional advice regarding your situation should be sought if required. Some products discussed may have limitations and not be available in all states. Excessive unpaid loans may affect performance. Distributions may become taxable if not managed properly. Replacements may not be suitable for everyone. There may be charges when replacing coverage. Dividend rates and bank line of credit rates may change.
Would you like to sponsor the Your Personal Bank show hosted by Ference Toth? We are looking for like-minded partners who want to join our rapidly growing radio show. I frequently state, economic freedom is freedom. Thomas Jefferson wrote, a well-informed electorate is a prerequisite to democracy. Contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com to help increase financial literacy and protect our freedoms.
This place has a pulse. You hear it in the canopy, feel it in the ground. Life, fully illuminated, engulfs you. From the birds singing in the treetops above to the tiniest insects in the soil below, you take a deep, cleansing breath, filling your lungs with the essence of the forest. Now, imagine it's all gone. Healthy, life-giving forests reduced to nothing. No singing birds, no lush canopy, and water and food in short supply around the world. Time is running out to protect our forests. And without our love, they can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our forests. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
A gentle breeze blows across your face as you take a refreshing sip of water, appreciating the stillness of another morning fishing on the lake. The distant gurgle of a stream reminds you of days spent playing in the creek, the cool, clear water rushing between your toes. You love this time with nature, the feeling of putting everything on hold to connect with the world around you. Now, imagine it's all gone. No fish, no lake, no water. One of life's most vital resources, irreplaceably depleted. Time is running out to protect fresh water, and without our love, it can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our fresh water. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.